Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 24 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today on Groundhog Day is Brett Stillo, formerly of the 5 Minutes of Banzai and 5 Minutes of Trouble. Welcome back to the show, Brett. Did you see your shadow?
No, I don't see it. I don't see my shadow. But happy Groundhog Day. But that's another movie by Minute podcast.
Yes, of course.
But it is officially Groundhog Day. So take a groundhog to lunch. They'll appreciate it. So,
take them to lunch or have them for lunch?
I can only imagine the comedy potential of going to Katz's Deli with a groundhog.
Okay.
And, you know, I'd imagine the groundhog would just want, like, I don't know, carrots or something like that. But
probably. Yeah, we'll leave that to Bill Murray. Let him figure that out.
Yeah, let's leave that to Bill Murray.
Yeah. So first of all, we've hit the quarter mark of this movie. Episode 24
wow.
is the, you know, quarter of the 96 minutes of this movie. And, I mean, a lot has happened in the movie up till now, but there's still so much more to come. So keep sticking with us along the way.
Interesting.
So minute 24 begins with this documentary couple continuing to talk and ends with Alice defending Sally. So yesterday we started talking about this documentary couple that, you know, this lady man played by Al Christie, who, you know, had quite a number of wives and girlfriends over the years, even though he does not look like someone who you would think would be a ladies' man, but apparently the character is meant to be. What can you do? And then he looks at the woman next to him and goes, "But I couldn't take my eyes off of you. I remember I snuck over to her and I said, 'What did I say?' 'You said, what are you doing after?' Right. So just remind everyone, they were at Eddie Colicchio's funeral, where he comes over to him and says, and he said, 'What are you doing after?' Right. So I ditch Roberta. We go for coffee. A month later, we're married. And she goes, 35 years to the day after our first marriage." So, I mean, first of all, it's a great story.
It is.
You know, it's somewhat sad that this is, you know, the story, because, you know, to think that, you know, it took you 35 years to get back to the person that you knew you were meant to be with, you know, and you know, had many other adventures along the way, you know, it's somewhat sad to think that it took the person that long, you know, especially knowing that these are based on true stories.
Exactly.
You know, so someone did go through this. I mean, whether they met a Marjorie and a Roberta and a Barbara and a Katie, who knows, but, you know, did something. Now, we didn't mention anything about the name Roberta yesterday.
No.
So do you know the definition of the name Roberta?
Well, the obvious one would be a female pronunciation, or it's a female version of Robert, but I can't recall where Robert comes from. But
that's a name that sounds familiar to me.
Where does that come from? But no, I do not know. I know I've probably looked up the origin, but I cannot recall. I will say, when I was little, I had a wonderful pet rabbit named Roberta, because it was rabbit, you know, it was like a female rabbit. So yeah, that I always think of my bunny when I hear that name.
Okay.
But I know that's not
okay.
My name, bunny. What does Roberta mean?
Despair. Okay, well, as you said, it's the female version of the name Robert, which means fame, glory, honor, praise, renown. It is apparently the second most frequently used given name of ancient Germanic origin. Unfortunately, I couldn't find what the first one was. But that doesn't matter. It's the second one, so that's good enough for me from that perspective. No, for me, the name Roberta actually has a lot more meaning than one would think.
Oh, really?
One of them is because, you know, my real last name begins with an A, So I remember when I first started working at a high-tech company, this was probably 27 years ago, something like that. So at the time, the way that they would do it is you'd have the email address would be your first name and your first initial of your last name. So my email address that I got on the first day was Roberta. And I obviously immediately went and spoke and became friends with the IT guys and explained to them that I got to change it. You can't keep that.
Yeah,
It just doesn't work that
it's
way. You got to switch it. And they
sure.
did. And they did. And the second thing the second anecdote that I always love about the name Roberta is that I remember when I was a senior in high school, so we went for a class trip to Florida, and I couldn't go. So one of my classmates, she decided to go instead of me, and but they had already bought my ticket. So, this was obviously pre 9/11, and we talked earlier in the week about traveling under an assumed name. But apparently, she traveled and had to tell people her name was Roberta. And that was why, her plane ticket said Robert on it. As if it was something that was cut off. They didn't ask for ID at the time, so it didn't really matter. But I always love those little
Oh,
stories
yeah.
about it. There are tons of variations on the name Roberta or Robert. We're not going to go into all of them. We'll just talk about Rob. That's good enough for me. I don't need to go any further than that. There are many kings named Robert from many different countries, most notably from Scotland. Okay, in Normandy, there was also a king Robert, who was known as Robert the Magnificent. Magnificent. It
Nice.
is to this day still one of the most frequently given male names. Okay, it was the top 10 most given. It was in the top 10 of the given boys' names in the U.S. for 47 years, from 1925 to 1972. I missed the cut. I was born in 74, so I guess my parents were being a little nostalgic at the time. Who knows? It's still widely used, even though there are many negatively evaluated historical figures who have that name. Do you know any famous fictional characters?
Oh, here's an obscure one. Captain Robert April, first captain of the USS Enterprise,
Yes.
Star Trek.
Okay, I'm familiar with that one. Okay, now the one that threw me off was, did you know that Rocky Balboa's real name is Robert Balboa?
No.
I did not know that.
That blows me away. Does
Yes, me too.
in your research, is there ever a time in the Rocky series when, do you, Robert Balboa, take
I
Adrian?
don't know. I don't know. I know that one of his son, I think his son is named Robert in like Rocky Five, I think. I could be wrong, but yeah, no. So that was the one that really jumped out at me. I mean, there's a 2 pages list here of famous Robert or Bobs.
Wow.
Like SpongeBob is a Robert, that type of thing.
Okay.
Bob the Builder is a Robert. It's like. But I like the going with the Rocky Balboa aspect, because that is something that completely threw me off. Wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, you know, you just
Not at all.
I just always assumed his name was Rocky. You know, it's like, what else could it be? I guess Rodrigo, I don't know. Anyway,
No, but he's Italian. He's the Italian stallion,
he is the
so.
Italian stallion. And but you know, again, once again, folks, you know, these movie by minute podcasts are educational. Your brains are expanding with amazing knowledge. Amaze your friends.
For sure. So then we fade to black, and the screen shows starts up again, and we see three women standing sitting at a table in a restaurant, cafe, something like that. On I'm assuming this is in the middle of Central Park, because it looks like that's what's around them.
Right?
I could be
Yeah.
wrong. I'm not familiar enough with New York geography, but it looks like they're in that type of setting. You see the high risers in the back, and you see all the trees behind them and stuff like that. And then the screen, we get a title that says, 5 years later. So now we have jumped to 1987.
Yeah.
And we can notice that Sally is the one sitting in the middle, because we recognize Meg Ryan, because her hairdo is once again differently, done differently than in the past two segments of the movie. And then we continue through the conversation. We hear one of them, who this is her one of her best friends, named Marie, played by the late great Carrie Fisher, who I gotta say, this is one of my favorite. I'm a big Star Wars fan, but I think she is amazing here. She really hits
Yeah.
it out of the park in this movie, because she's so different from what you would expect from Princess Leia, that type of thing. And so the
Absolutely, yeah.
conversation can starts. We pick up in the middle of a conversation, and she says, "I went through his pockets, okay?" And then the other woman at the table, who we find out is named Alice, says, "Marie, why'd he go through his pockets? You know what I found?" "No, what?" "They just bought a dining room table. He and his wife just went out and spent $1,600 on a dining room table." "Where?" "The point isn't where, Alice. The point is he's never going to leave her." "So what else is new? You've known this for 2 years. You're right. You're right. I know you're right. Why can't you find someone single?" "When I was single, I knew a lot of nice single men. There must be someone. Sally found somebody." And then Marie goes, "Sally got the last good one." And then there's a beat, and then we hear Sally chime in and says, "Joe and I broke up." "What? When?" "Monday." "You waited 3 days to tell us? Joe's available?" "Oh, for God's sakes, Marie. Don't you have any feelings about this?" She's obviously upset. And that's the whole dialogue for this minute. Now, this tells us so much about the characters just by listening to
Yeah.
this first conversation. Marie is obviously having an affair with someone who's married, and she is diluding herself into believing that he will eventually leave her, even though we know that that's probably not going to happen, because this is a typical movie trope, that they throw in there. I'm assuming it happens in real life too, but in the movies we see this quite often. They mention the fact that he bought a dining room table. Now, why does he have his receipt in his pocket? You go and buy furniture. You're not going to keep your receipt in your pocket, that she's going through. Maybe jacket pocket. It doesn't necessarily. See, my first thought was his pants pockets, but okay, maybe if it's a jacket pocket, possibly. I don't know. Do you think $1,600 for a dining room table is a lot in 1987?
Yeah, because that's factor in inflation. A side note, I love doing movie inflation.
Of course
I
I
don't know if
do.
you ever do that, but yeah, it's just I watched a movie from the 40s, not last week, and like I'll give you $500. That's
Right.
that's
How
more
much do you think
like
it is today?
What 5,000 500 what the $1,600 table
1987.
in
Yeah, how
by
much is
today's standards?
$1,600 in 1987? How much is that worth in 2022? Sorry, 20. Well,
I'm gonna
2023, but the
say,
information is from 2022.
let's see. I'm gonna say that it is
It is
3,200 now.
4,200. I'm rounding up slightly, but still,
Yeah, but still, okay. So I was a conservative estimate. Yeah,
Yeah,
inflation's a
seriously.
bummer,
But
man.
even now, thinking about it, spending $4,200 on a dining room table, that's an expensive dining room table. In either time frame, whether you're talking about the 1980s or now. That's a lot.
And you have to kind of take it back to Marie's perspective that
why would he spend so much money if he's planning on leaving her? You know, like he's obviously promised her.
It's,
you know.
It's, you know, you don't, you know, it's that table is not an out.
Definitely not.
Trust me, she'll be so happy with the table that she won't notice I'm gone. So
probably not.
But also, and I think it also says, it says a lot about Marie that she's in this very bad relationship, and just a lot, you know, a lot of great insight about about all
and
the characters.
Even Alice. You get, I mean, like Alice. You said, the first question Alice asks Marie is, you know, when she says about the dining room table, she's aware. Meaning, where did he buy the table for only $1,600? You know, that's her comment there.
Yeah. we have different priorities here, Alice.
Yeah, but we can tell that Marie is completely nuts. She's nuts about this guy, and she's deluded herself into believing that he will leave her, even though they've been together for 2 years. You know, and I love her response. You're right. You're right. I know you're right. You know, Carrie Fisher delivers this line so well. You're right. You're right. I know you're right.
Yeah.
You know, she's you know, trying to convince herself, but she knows that she won't be able to convince herself. And then Alice is lying to her back saying, why can't you just find someone single? That's just great.
Yeah.
Why keep, you know, dating married men? Go find someone who is single. And then, you know, the information comes out that, you know, Sally and Joe are no longer together.
Yeah, and it's just some great character-driven dialogue here.
Yeah, did you notice how Sally is acting throughout this whole conversation between the other two women at the table?
I did. It's just a nice touch.
She's like fidgeting the whole time. She's not. She's unnerved about something.
Yeah,
you know,
she's listening and not listening.
Yes, that's right.
She's drinking her salad and playing with her wine with a fork. So,
right. She's drinking her salad.
And no, I'm just like, she's kind of, you know, exaggerating. She's Meg Ryan's doing a great job of not really paying attention, even though she's, you know, and just, you know, like, you know, it is the opposite of no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, she's trying so hard to play it down, and it's like, no, this is, and you know, it's the reaction of the other two, and because they, you know, they immediately, Alice and Marie immediately sort of drop everything.
Yeah,
it's like, wait, this is important.
Yeah,
but
and I love their reactions to the whole thing. I mean, like, first of all, if you look at Sally's eyes, you know, she's like rubbing her eyes right before. She gives this information out that she and Joe have broken up. She, you know, I don't know if she's crying. Maybe she's trying to hold back tears by rubbing her eyes like that, or maybe she's rubbing her eyes because she's been crying for 3 days. I don't know.
Very good observation.
Yeah. Don't know. And you know, both Marie and Alice are completely shocked by this whole thing, and I love the fact that their reactions are completely different. Alice is very supportive, and what's the first thing that Marie says? Joe's available.
Yeah.
You know, Alice is like, why did you wait 3 days to tell us? And
you know, something that struck my mind is that's a long time.
apparently, like, if they're very good friends, but what I love, you know, the fact is that if they said that it happened on Monday and it's been 3 days, so Thursday, like today. Today is Thursday.
Nice.
We are talking about this scene that is taking place on a Thursday. On a Thursday. Obviously, decades away, decades apart. You know, we're only 36 years or 30, between 35 and 36, depending on when this is taking place, removed from when this scene apparently is happening. So.
Well, I love that. You know, like movie reality synchronicity. And then also when you you just like, it's a Thursday, or, you know, you can kind of figure out the dates based on information you got. I'm sure you've had that experience of watching a movie and it just happens to be April 1st. And suddenly, you know, somebody in the movie blurts out, oh, it's April 1st. And you're, you know, it's just like that weird.
Right. One of the things for me that's kinda, very weird is because I rewatch movies, you know, years later and stuff like that. And I keep a record of when I watched a movie, and I'll like watch a movie and then, you know, I'll look to see when the last time it was that I saw it. And I find out that it was the same day, you know, like 7 years ago on August 30th, you know, I saw this or whatever day it was, you know, and it's just, or within a day or two, you know, just like little coincidences like that. You know, so those are always fun to catch along the way.
Yeah. The weird magnetic power of movies. Just the draw and the pull. Couple of things come to mind for me with this scene. Was there anything you wanted?
I actually finished all my notes for this scene besides the script. So, you know, besides the fact that Marie sips her wine as she's talking, you know, so she's not only an adulteress, she's also a lush. I don't know.
well, I mean, this is a very wine centric movie. Mm-hmm. Everybody's drinking wine. And that kind of goes with, it kind of leads into something, you know, I was going to say, because you have one thing about this scene is, that background, you know, you have the great Barry Sonnenfeld lensing this movie for Rob Reiner, and that background, you know, that's absolutely painting with light. It looks like a Monet painting in the background, and just. You know, he's just dialing it in, but it's like boom, and it's just a reminder that this movie, it's a love story, but it's also a love story about New York. It's such a New York centric movie,
Because one of the things they do is they show us New York as often as possible.
In a really wonderful way, you know, on a personal note. You know, I love the gritty 70s New York movies. It's probably you do. You know, we could probably talk about, you know, I have my own name for that genre. That's New York is Hell, because that's kind of the theme when you have, say, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Oh, I love that movie.
Like, right? Yes. Right. And part of that is just, you know, the terrorists are making the demands and the police saying, we can't do that. because everything is messed up in that movie and everybody's angry and yelling at each other, and you know, Taxi Driver, of course, and you know, movies that are filmed in New York in the 70s where there's actually just garbage on the street. That's not the set, that's just there was a garbage strike, so you just see what a mess New York is. But you know, I think in the 80s, you know, it's changing. You know, people like, you know, about the same age as Harry and Sally are like, I'm moving back to New York. I'm going to try to make it here.
Well, and it's the yuppie. It was the yuppie aspect of it.
Exactly. And, you know, you kind of have to, you know, call out like, Harry, you know, Harry and Sally are, you know, they're boomers. Yeah. And, you know.
Well, Harry more than Sally.
So yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm definitely Billy Crystal. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. But they're no offense to them, but they're kind of more yuppies, and they've got a career going. You know, it's this wonderful illusion that we know Harry and Sally have jobs. Their friends have jobs. We never see them actually working. They're always we're going to lunch. We're going to a museum. You know, and it's. You know, there's other movies doing this, but I think this one is a really good example of, you know, by the 80s, you know, people were saying, you know, it's almost like, you know, leave New York alone. Yeah, we got our problems. There's so many great stuff in New York. You know, a little later, there's the inevitable let's have a hot dog from a cart scene.
Yes.
I think it's Jess and Harry, and it's like, I think the only thing missing is that Harry and Sally should have a slice of pizza. Maybe that scene was shot and it ended up on the cutting room
floor, they couldn't have them eat too much food, you know.
No, but it's just, you know, it's New York is a magic kingdom.
Yes.
And I think Barry and his the way he you know, however he was able to highlight that background, because that doesn't even that doesn't even look real.
Yeah.
It's a, yeah, that's a phony backdrop. And yeah, and also just I'm so happy I got a minute. I got 2 minutes with Carrie Fisher. This is a treat.
That's right.
You know, because you know you assigned me minutes. I was like, ah, well, maybe if I'm lucky, I probably won't. You know,
and you get her introduction, you know, also. Fisher, you don't even you don't yeah, just get introduction. You just don't get Marie. You get Marie's introduction.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And yeah, and she's such a great character, yeah. And it just makes, you know, like probably like you, it's like, oh man, I miss Carrie Fisher, and I wish she had done more movies and characters like this. This is kind of her kind of a character. She probably, you know, enjoyed playing, you know, a quirky New Yorker.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it also, last thing is it ties in, like I mentioned this yesterday, you know, so many, you know, there was like this whole gang of people who had worked together, were friends. You know, Carrie Fisher was a good friend of Penny Marshall, who was married to Rob Reiner, and Penny Marshall makes Big, and you know, all the, you know, Billy Crystal, a friend of Rob Reiner, they did movie, you know, they, everybody's, it's like there's this whole talent pool and they all know each other and they work together, and it's just like, you could say the same thing of the, you know, the classic ones, Spielberg and Lucas and Scorsese, and they're, you know, they're working on each other's projects and looking at each, you know, looking at cuts and things like that. There's also this group who are, you know, they're making like slightly more adult movies in the 80s as an alternative to that. And just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, too. Okay. That's great. So the script has some changes here. So first of all, with the documentary couple. So in the movie, he talks about the fact that he couldn't take his eyes off for her. And you remember, he snuck over to her and started talking to her and he didn't remember all that stuff. None of that is in the script. Okay.
Interesting.
You know, yesterday we ended with the point where the woman says, "Don't forget Roberta." And he goes, "Oh, Roberta." And then the woman says, "And then we got married again." The man goes, 45 years to the day after our first marriage. And the woman says, "But I never married anybody in between. I waited. I knew." So I think it's somewhat of a disappointment that they left out that final line from the woman, because that's part of the whole idea here. You know, that you know, people finding each other after so many years. You know, that's part of the whole idea here. But okay, what can you do? At least it's in the script. And the setup for the scene in 1987 is also differently. It says in the script, it's 5 years later. Sally is walking down the street to a restaurant in Lake Petaluma. I don't know what that is. She looks even prettier now. She's wearing a loose blouse, full skirt, and boots. Okay. Two women, Marie and Alice, are at a table for three. Marie is dark hair, dark-eyed beauty. Alice is cute and plump, a married lady. Sally comes in and sits down as the others finish giving their drink orders to the waiter. Sally says, "Sorry, I'm late." And then turns to the waiter and says, "Here's what I want. I want a Campari and soda, but here's how I want it. I want the Campari in a glass with ice and the soda on the side, but in a bottle. I don't want the soda in a glass. I want to mix it myself." And then it says, Sally, you know, while she's ordering, then we have the conversation between Marie and Alice that starts. And as Marie starts talking about what she found in his pockets, that's when it says Sally's done with her order. So, I mean, it's a little different. I understand why they cut that out, because they don't need to once again show us how Sally orders things. But I just, you know, find it funny that the original idea was to, you know, in every one of these segments to start it off by her ordering something in a strange way. But yeah, they cut that out. That's fine. Like I said, I'm okay with that. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Dating Courting Edition, where my guest will give a adventure story, misadventure, anecdote, something that happened to them over the course of life that's related to either dating or courting. So Brett, you teased on Tuesday that you have another story to tell us.
Go ahead.
Why don't you tell us that story that you wanted to tell us?
I feel like I should tell the sequel to the story I told Tuesday about the first time my wife and I met, and we had an interesting courtship that has certain Nora Ephron overlaps to it. Let me ask you a question, Rob. Do you remember Yahoo Group?
Yes, of course.
So, ancient history, taking us back to 2004. This is where, if we're filming this, we see 6 months later. Yeah. I'm on a Yahoo Group, and I see Audra is, and it's kind of like it's a Yahoo Group for like local entertainers, people in bands. She's helping book at a nightclub that's just opened in Oakland, California, and you know, she's asked us, hey, I'm looking for, you know, unique acts. And I remembered her from our encounter 6 months earlier. But, you know, so I genuinely like, oh, yeah, let me help out with this. Not being like Harry, but not having any ulterior motive, which, oh, you're looking for some. OK, yeah, I know some acts. And from there, we started writing back and emailing each other every day.
Wow.
And it was a little like another Nora Ephron movie that she also directed, You've Got Mail. But we had this several months of emailing, and she suggests, hey, maybe we could hang out sometime since we seem to have so much in common. And I was actually, to be honest, like Harry Lady, maybe later in the movie. I was like, I've had some letdowns with romance. Maybe I just want to be a friend. I don't want to get my hopes up here. From there, we finally hung out in person, we started dating, which became instantly after that. But yeah, we had this very long internet correspondence. So it is funny oftentimes, because there's a certain stigma to this, to what I'm about to say. But you know, people say, hey, how did you guys meet? And we both kind of smile and say, on the internet. Like, oh really? Yeah, it was it was all thanks to Yahoo Groups that I miss to this day. But that's how.
Okay, that's a great story.
Thank you.
That's a modern day an internet age version of Harry Met Sally.
Yeah. I feel it's, like
when Brett met Audra.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of, sort of was. It was like, again, it had some different truth. Truth is, I don't exist, and Nora Ephron just wrote my backstory. So,
there you go. Hey, that works. Why not?
She worked for the CIA. So anyway, but yeah, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, great. Do you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with Brett Stillo?
Yes, you can get in touch with Brett Stillo via Yahoo Groups. I don't know, they don't exist anymore, don't even try that. But yeah, I'm on the internet, and you can look for me on my good friend and partner Josh Horowitz has saved our two series, 5 Minutes of Trouble, all about Big Trouble in Little China, and a whole series of that, and then 5 Minutes of Banzai, all about the adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension.
Ooh, fun. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So, Brett, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finish off the week with us?
Oh, we got to. It's, February the 2nd. Yeah, got to finish
well,
off.
Well, tomorrow's the 3rd. Tomorrow's the 3rd.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Today's the 2nd. February. Hello, actually, if you were stuck in Groundhog Day, tomorrow would still be February 2nd. So you were right.
Okay.
If your name was Phil Connors.
Time
shout out to Bubba, and shout out to Robert Black and everyone else who's done Groundhog Day. Sean German.
The great Sean German. Hello, Sean. You say we're name dropping like crazy here, folks.
There you go. Why not? All right. Until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's gave having. Gave me a thrill with all your faults.
I love you still, it had to be you. Wonderful you, had to be you.